Here's Andy Udman.
So I was eating like 10, 12 portions of fruit and vegetables a day. You know, I was a brown rice and lentils guy.
Right.
I ate hardly any fat. Totally low-fat diet. Just a brilliant diet. It's exactly the diet that everybody who in the health profession would tell you to have.
The sickest people that I see on a daily basis are the people who have been near vegetarian, vegetarian, or vegan. And the sickest of those bunch would be the vegans that I see. And it's very difficult to get them well once they have basically imbalanced their biochemistry to a point of no return. And it is fixable, but it takes a lot of work to fix a vegan. I'm telling you, they are so incredibly sick.
Folks, we're here to talk business, and we're going to be blunt, and we're going to be adult, and I hope you're ready for that, so fasten your seatbelts. If you've been sick for a day, and I cannot recall the last time I've been sick, literally, it's been years and years and years, a minor cold, very rare, even having a minor cold, but I do recall years and years ago being sick, and needing the porcelain. In stereo, as it were. I cannot imagine the story we're about to hear. I cannot even imagine. This is a man whose best friend in life, to be blunt, was the toilet. For 17 years, he and porcelain were on a first-name basis. In fact, he was afraid to leave the bathroom. Now, why would I tell you and share with you these horrible details? Well, because he found a solution. I am looking at his picture before and his picture after. You would not know it's the same person. Pam Killeen, you've been through a bit of this yourself.
That's right. Yeah, like our guest this morning, I am a recovering vegan. I was 9 years as a vegan believing that it was a healthy diet, and it completely backfired on me and my health. And now today, basically what I spend my time doing is helping a lot of my clients who were vegetarians or vegans or near vegetarians, and I help them get well.
Can I be blunt with you?
Mm-hmm.
We're friends, right?
Yeah.
I'm getting some blowback from people who say, I am so sick of hearing Pam Killeen slam vegetables and promote meat.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? You just keep bringing up these incredible people whose lives were, they were in prison. They were in a prison of bad health. And John is another example.
Exactly. And I have a lot of compassion for people who have been misinformed, and dangerously so. I was there. You know, back in the 90s, I knew very little about nutrition. And you know the expression, Andy, a little bit of knowledge can be a very dangerous thing. And if I knew then what I know now, I would never have become a vegetarian. Now, so that said as well, we have to be very careful on this advice that we're getting from Health Canada saying, you know, eat all these fruits and vegetables and all this grain. And these foods, essentially what they do is they displace the more nutrient-dense animal foods. And so they put people, even who are near vegetarians, at risk.
So why haven't all the vegetarians died off?
Well, they are. They are. If you've been in a situation where your culture has adapted to a vegetarian diet, like let's talk about in southern India, for example, and they have adapted to a vegetarian diet, but they know to eat enough dairy and enough eggs in order to substitute for not eating red meat. But you also have to consider in southern India, they're not as healthy as in northern India where they eat more animal foods. So that's just one example.
His book is called The Meat Fix. How a lifetime of healthy eating nearly killed me. That is so profound, I'm going to read it again. The Meat Fix. How a lifetime of healthy eating nearly killed me. That's brilliant. We're joined this morning all the way from across the pond over where they're having some kind of Olympic event. John Nicholson joins us this morning. Morning, John.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good morning.
We're doing great. John, 27 years, you were sick, and finally you discovered that the solution was eating normal. Are you a slow learner?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have no excuses other than I was misinformed by every single health professional in England that I ever saw. And increasingly, even today, this is still the case, this hard line on what is and isn't healthy eating is actually getting harder. They're pushing for lower-fat diets, less dairy produce, less meat, less red meat particularly. So it kind of like I was stupid but I was stupid because I believed what I was told by my government and by my health officials. I didn't know they were stupid. I didn't know they were ignorant, but they are. And I would warn anybody against following the advice that your doctor has on nutrition, because frankly, I don't know what it's like in Canada, but in the UK, the doctors don't know much about nutrition. If they did, they wouldn't have been stumped by what happened to me.
That's the same situation here, John.
I had no clue of how to solve it, and I had to solve it for myself. And that was by eating a diet that was high in fat, in animal fat, rich in meat and dairy produce, low in carbohydrates.
Well,
and it transformed me. It transformed me.
Well, we want to get to the horrible details of your story first, but Pam, you know, the comment that John made about the doctors here, they're no different here.
No, they're not different here at all. They're not trained in nutrition, and what little they do know on nutrition is dangerous information, because most of them are still touting the low-fat diet. And more now we're seeing in the media stories leaking out that, you know, we've been duped for the last 30, 40, 50 years. So I hope the situation turns around, but as I jokingly say on the show, Andy, I think our officials at Health Canada are going to be the last ones to catch on.
I'm just going to throw this out. As we talk to John, Pam, Colleen, and I, if you know the story of a vegetarian and their health problems, feel free to share it, 643-1290. Maybe you are a vegetarian. Pam, you say you know vegetarians right now who still, one of the videos I watched of John this morning, he says he just could not bring himself to the point where he would have to say, maybe I was wrong.
Mm-hmm. A lot of them are, and they're very afraid because, again, they're just terrified of eating things like red meat. They think that this is this food genuinely joined the dark side, and that somehow or another it's going to adversely affect their health or the planet or whatever. And that's just a lot of propaganda, unfortunately.
John, how did you get into the vegetarian and then the vegan religion?
Well, I was a hippie in 1984. And I was basically a kind of long-haired freaky guy who liked his rock and roll. And I just was living in the countryside, and I thought, I saw animals taken away to be killed, and I thought, that doesn't seem very fair on animals. And it was a quick and rather arbitrary decision, which then became a lifestyle. And I think that when you adopt a lifestyle like vegetarianism or like veganism, it becomes a kind of moral thing. And it becomes who you are known as by other people. They know that this is your kind of religion, if you like. And so you stick to it and stick to it, despite all of the indications that it's doing you a lot of damage, because it's part of your self-identity. And that was certainly the case with me. And I would never have changed, I don't think, unless my partner, who was also a vegan for this whole period since 1984, was very sick also. And she said, I think it is not what we're eating, it's what we're not eating.
That's right.
And that was the first step towards changing the diet. And because we've done everything else to try and cure ourselves. I had a chronic IBS for 17 years, as you so graphically document. and basically, nothing will stay inside of you. Everything that you put inside of you comes out very quickly and at high speed and without you having much choice about it.
Okay, John, I don't want to get too graphic, but I'm going to do my seatbelt up and allow our listeners to do the same so they don't drive off the 401. But you spend, in your book, The Meat Fix, you were sick for 26 years. 17 years of those, you basically were afraid to get more than 30 feet from a bathroom. Let's spell out what that was like.
Well, that was basically your whole life is conducted around public restrooms. So you kind of, wherever you've got to go, wherever you are, you have to plan for where you are, because you know that something's going to happen. You know you're going to have a digestive incident, let's put it that way. So you plan your whole life around that. And at its worst, when my IBS was at its worst, you would need the bathroom 7 and 8 times a day. And at times, you would need it when there was nothing left to come out of you. I know that sounds terrible, but it really is. And it's just basically your whole digestive system is in revolt. And what it actually does to your body is it leaves you malnourished because you simply have no food left inside of you at any point in time.
You referred to a partner. This is your spouse?
Yes, that's right, Dawn, yeah.
Okay, now how did you ever maintain that relationship when you had that kind of physical affliction?
Oh, I mean, to be honest, Dawn had other afflictions, not the same one as my IBS, but you know, I don't know. I guess our relationship was very strong. It's certainly been tested for 32 years. But she was very sympathetic, and, you know, it's kind of... We like toilet humour in England, as you know. Much of our humour is based around the toilet. So I got by laughing about it and by making jokes about it.
Now, with irritable bowel syndrome, it's a very, very common complaint today. And people I know who have it tell me that their doctors are saying it has nothing to do with nutrition.
Well, that's just ridiculous, because it's a complaint of the digestive system. And the digestive system exists purely to digest food. So if it isn't to do with the food that you're eating, what else could it possibly be? And this is what really why I wrote the book, was because I was so angry. I was angry at myself, but I was angry at the advice I'd been given all of these years, and I'm angry at myself for believing it. Because self-evidently, it must be to do with the food that you eat. In fact, everything that you are, how you feel, both mentally and physically, must be have a direct relationship to what you put in your body, because we are what we eat. And this doesn't seem to have penetrated the intelligence of the medical community quite profoundly enough.
That's
and,
right.
And that's exactly why I wrote the book, because I wanted... Because it's counterintuitive, isn't it? You think that everything that you know about healthy eating is everything has to be light in fat, and no red meats and all of this sort of everything. You know it. I know everybody knows what healthy eating is. But it turns out that makes you sick. And it sounds counterintuitive, but only because we've been brainwashed for so many years by health professionals who in themselves have been brainwashed by highly paid, expensive lobbyists who I subsequently discovered, had paid for much of the science and the research that, inverted commas, proves this to be the case.
Wow. That...
And basically, I think we've been duped in order to have money made out of our conditions.
John, here's the question I have for you. Then you can ponder. We have to take a short break. I want you to think about this. It took you 26 years before you would explore the option of not being a vegetarian and a vegan. 26 years. So you and Pam, who went through it for years and years, know how tough it is to reach the people who are listening right now.
Yeah.
They're listening, but they're not hearing. Or maybe they're hearing, but they're not listening. It's not going to their heart. It's just going to their ears. They're rejecting it. I'm going to ask you when we come back, how do we get them past that? When we come back in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Oh, I wish you could hear the conversations we have during the commercial breaks. Pam, let's just roll it back 30 seconds to the story you're telling me. You can see it in their eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was having a conversation at a health show in Toronto, and now the show is predominantly vegetarian-based. And I go and I talk about I warn people about vegetarianism as a recovering vegan myself. And I was having a conversation with a fellow who was a raw food vegan, and his wife was sitting at the table with me holding on to her child. And I looked at her eyes, and she just had this pleading look in her eyes, just saying, help, you know, get through to him, because she couldn't get through to him. In terms of, you know, relinquishing this diet. And I know that he was there with a gentleman who is apparently quite a well-known person in the vegan movement. I know for a fact that this guy is very sick, and he won't come forward and admit how sick he is. And I know other vegans, Andy, who actually lie about being a vegan because they don't want their peers to know that they've relinquished the diet. It's tragic. They get so trapped in this very dogmatic thinking.
Let me ask you, John Nicholson, the author of The Meat Fix, How a Lifetime of Healthy Eating Nearly Killed Me, to comment on what Pam just said. What's tougher, to get someone to renounce their religion, which has come down through the ages, and their parents and their grandparents and their grandparents, or to renounce being a vegetarian?
Well, I think what you have to appreciate is that most people stop eating meat less out of health and more out of a moral conviction. And once you bring morals into anything, and even if you feel as though it's doing you harm health-wise, people, and I know many vegetarians who are like this, who simply would rather be sick than hurt animals. And I think I got into the mindset of feeling that being vegetarian made me somehow more sensitive and more spiritual almost. And I think that these are the emotions that bind you to it. You feel, I think it's hard to admit this, but you feel superior. And I think that is what is behind a lot of it. You feel aloof.
You
feel better than normal people.
You came in from the darkness, but do you sense that many vegetarians take this awful affliction, this religion, to their grave?
Yeah, I mean, I think increasingly this is going to be the case because, I mean, I'm 50 and I became a vegan when I was 23. And I think that my generation is really is the first generation to both be vegetarian and bring kids up vegetarian in any kind of numbers, certainly in the UK. So I think that we're only really now starting to now see the health fallouts of this. And that previously, vegetarians were very small in number in the generation behind me.
Let me ask Pam, because we have to break for a news update in just a moment. Pam, the question of how you get someone who treats their vegetarian, vegan diet like a religion, how do you get them to move past that? You're qualified to answer that because you were there.
Oh, and not just that, I test biochemistry. I can see it in the biochemistry, and the biochemistry just doesn't lie. I mean, when I test a recovering vegetarian or vegan, even a near vegetarian, I see the copper toxicity. I see the lower zinc levels. I see the digestive stress. I see the mood issues. I see the sleep disorders, the low libido, the infertility. You know, these mothers that have been vegetarian that if they do conceive a child and have a child, unfortunately, the most tragic thing I see is the results of this diet in the child. So then I see the learning disabilities, the epilepsy, the neurological problems, the speech impediments. I see so many issues with the children of vegetarian mothers. It's just tragic.
There was something that John said that really struck me, and I'm going to ask you to comment just before we take the break. The problem when John was sick all those years was not with what he was eating. This was his spouse who said this. But with what he was not eating.
That's right. That's right. We're displacing the more nutrient-dense foods is what we're doing. And in displacing these nutrient-dense foods, we're missing out on so many valuable nutrients. We're missing out on the long-chain fatty acids. We're missing out on the proper minerals, and in not just the proper minerals, but the minerals in the correct ratios and balance, and all of these things are very crucial for health.
It's so important because I know I get a lot of people who think you're slamming broccoli. You're not slamming broccoli and Brussels sprouts and good fruits and vegetables. You're slamming the lack of eating
the more nutrient-dense foods like butter, meat, and eggs. And we have to be rational. We have to use common sense, because when we ate these foods, when we sat down and ate 3 square meals a day, and this would have been before World War II, these were the days, Andy, when we weren't fat-phobic, cholesterol-phobic, egg-phobic, meat-phobic, chicken-skin-phobic, liver-phobic. We didn't have any of those food phobias before World War II, and we were actually pretty healthy back then, both physically and mentally.
John, we have to take a short break for a news update. I wonder if I can ask you about something else, and maybe it'll be on the news. While you're talking to us, are you keeping one eye on the telly and all those Olympic games?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're all behind the British competitors here. It's fantastic.
Has the whole country gotten into this thing?
Yeah, pretty much. Paul of England, certainly Scotland, not so much for us, because it's happening in England. The Scots will ignore it because it is by virtue of the fact it's in England. But yeah, I would say it's been surprisingly popular because the British like moaning about things. And complaining, and there was a lot of moaning and complaining before the Olympics, but everyone's enjoying it now.
Well, we better skedaddle to the news update before we get ourselves embroiled in a political situation, so stand by. John Nicholson is the author of The Meat Fix. I love this, the subtitle, How a Lifetime of Healthy Eating Nearly Killed Me. We'll be back with Pam Colleen and author John Nicholson in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
And that's the tragedy with vegetarians out there, is that they cannot connect the dots. They keep following a vegetarian diet, keep getting sicker, 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 and never associate how lousy they feel to the vegetarian diet. And unfortunately, so many vegetarians will prolong vegetarianism into 20 or more years of vegetarianism and be totally oblivious to the nutritional deficiencies that they're causing because of this diet.
Pam Colleen, along with Andy Udman, in conversation with author John Nicholson, the author of the book, The Meat Fix, How a Lifetime of the Healthy Eating Nearly Killed Me. And again, some real nuggets out of our conversation during the commercial. Pam, the list of health effects mm-hmm. from the vegetarian lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Let's just start with teenage girls.
Well, this is the trouble I have today when I see the popularity of vegetarianism among teenage girls is they don't know, they haven't been told that they're going to reduce their chances of ovulation. So in other words, it's going to adversely affect their fertility. And they don't know this going into the diet. And where men are concerned, of course, you're going to see lowered sperm count. And these are all red flags to tell us that this diet is just not a healthy diet.
But how quickly can you recover from some of these effects?
You can if you go back on eating red meat and butter, all the things that John's going to be talking to us about is that you can recover. The trouble I have with vegetarians is getting their digestion back working again, getting their mineral levels back again, getting rid of the copper toxicity, which is a big problem with vegetarians or even near vegetarians, and getting them so that their brain starts operating on all cylinders
entirely
again.
Entirely rejigging mm-hmm. their biochemistry.
Pretty much. I have to rejig the whole system. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. John, how low did it get in the middle of those 26 years when you were a vegetarian vegan?
Well, I got so sick, really, that I almost gave up thinking it could be any different. It was so an everyday part of life, and I grew to almost accept it as just how I was. And it impinged on my life in every way you can imagine. But it wasn't just the IBS. It was the fact that I was energyless and tired a lot. I used to sleep in the afternoons for half an hour. And my eyesight started to blur. I was just increasingly, after about 15 years of being vegan, I was a physical wreck. And I was just exhausted from it.
Let me ask you to be really graphic, John, about this. It is said that the three main ingredients in any man's life in Canada are these three. I'm going to give you a moment so you can guess at them.
Yeah.
Bacon, hockey, and sex. Well, in your situation, you obviously weren't getting bacon. You couldn't care less about hockey. What about sex?
Yeah, well, that was very interesting that both of us suffered from really low libido. We don't have kids. I mean, I guess we could have. We didn't want kids. I guess we may have been able to have them. We'll never know.
So what did you do late at night?
When I started eating meat again, and this was really quite a profound and weird thing, it made me like an 18-year-old guy again. If I was going, I got this sudden priapic rushes of blood below the waist.
Wow.
And when I was eating meat, it would happen. And it just kind of felt like coming back to life. I know it sounds kind of weird. I know it sounds a bit far out. But it really was like a withered plant being watered again coming back to life.
In the midst of all this, your wife had no sex drive. You had no sex drive. So late at night after dinner, you would light candles, have a glass of wine, and play chess?
Yeah, pretty much. That's what we would do. And we'd have a lot of wine and then go to bed and sleep.
A lot of people don't know that the reason why a vegan diet was invented in the first place was to basically kill people's libido. That was the intention of a vegan diet historically.
I think what you were saying about high copper toxicity is very interesting, Pam, because I think it's the copper toxicity that gives vegetarians this sense of spirituality and of a certain sort of highness of spirit, because I think that one of the consequences of having a lot of copper in your blood is giving you this kind of almost sort of spiritual dimension to your life.
I'll tell you...
Being vegetarian is making you far out and closer to nature and the universe, but in fact, this is the buildup of toxins in your blood that are affecting your brain this way.
That's right, because the copper...
I noticed was once I changed my diet, was I became much more emotionally stable, mm-hmm. less prone to a kind of emotional outbursts of any sort, and I became the person I used to be.
Yes.
But of course I didn't, because it was so long, and everything had happened so slowly over so many years, I didn't realize how far away I'd got from what I used to be until I changed the diet. It was a profound change on every level.
Yes, the copper toxicity, what the copper does is it pushes up estrogen levels, which will push down other hormones. And so it's a very influential mineral in the body, and you just do not want to overload on it. And the other element is exactly with what you're saying, the spiritual feeling that they feel is essentially the copper toxicity. The copper just makes your brain feel really fuzzy. They have this really fuzzy feeling in their brain, and that's what they mistake as being more spiritual, actually. So generally, you're right. When people start getting their zinc and their copper in balance, that fuzzy feeling in the brain goes away, and they start feeling more and more emotionally stable and grounded.
Yeah, and of course, my diet was comprised, protein in my diet was largely comprised of soya, which is, surprise, surprise, is absolutely chock full of copper. And that's how it happens.
Okay,
you know,
John.
It's no coincidence. Once I started to investigate it, the pieces of the jigsaw all fell into place very quickly. But of course, I'm not a medically educated guy. So I would have thought someone who was medically educated could have told me about this. But I saw dozens of doctors, and none of them said anything about it.
Okay, we want to get to the happy ending, John. What was the moment? What was the moment when you had the epiphany? When you, after being sick all these years, your best friend was the toilet for 17 years. What was the moment where you realized it was your diet?
Oh, well, I thought when Dawn, my partner, suggested we meet, I thought it wouldn't work. So I went along with it to support her because she was convinced about it. And I sat down and I ate a steak. And how I felt both during and after eating that steak told me that, my body told me that this was correct for me. I felt absolutely fantastic. And for the first time in 17 years, within 24 hours, I had no IBS symptoms at all. And it just transformed my health. And I thought, oh, it's just a kind of freaky blip. It'll come back. Of course, the ill health didn't come back. And I got a bit stronger, and I started to put on. I lost loads of weight. I particularly lost a lot of body fat. And I just, as I say, came back to life. And as soon as I had that first steak, Dawn actually said to me, you are sort of, I was hunched over it, like I was protecting it, like I was a wild animal. She said, you need that, don't you? And I just felt on a very emotional, very visceral level that this was what my body was designed to consume and not all the soya rubbish that I've been pushing into it for so long.
And what did you discover, though, John, about the food industry and the lobbyists and so on? What did you discover was going on with our food supply in that regard?
Yeah. I mean, that was really interesting because as soon as I started to look into the whole industry, I found lots of people such as yourself who for years have been very cynical about the healthy eating advice that has become the orthodoxy. And as soon as you look into it, you find out that the promotion of a diet based on carbohydrates and not on fat was, in fact, like a political decision reached in the late 70s in America, which eventually came to Britain in the early 80s. And there were a lot of voices that were against it at the time and continue to be so. But the big industries, particularly the grain, the corn, and soy industries, and the vegetable shortening fat industries, all of whom stood to gain enormous amounts of money from this shift in diet, actually basically paid enough money to get enough people to vote their way in Congress. And that's how it happened. I mean, the Govan Committee, which is brilliantly documented in Gary Taubes' Good Calories, Bad Calories book, which I would recommend to anybody who's interested in this sort of thing.
John, do you have any way of knowing what fraction of the athletes competing right now at the Olympic Games would be on a vegetarian diet?
I wouldn't know, but I would imagine it's very few, if any.
That's right. Most really good athletes know that that diet is very depleting. In fact, just before the Olympics, the Chinese women's volleyball team became vegetarian because of some contaminated issues with the meat. And yeah. 3 weeks before the World Tournament, this was right before the Olympics, they actually did very, very poorly, and their coach said it was because of the vegetarian diet.
You know who I think is a vegetarian at the Olympics, John? Those eight badminton players who put in the most pathetic performance yesterday trying to lose the game. I've never seen anything quite so pathetic. I'm being facetious, but Pam, you're in a nutshell saying if you want to compete at the highest levels in sports,
you absolutely can't be
a vegetarian.
Listen, there are properties in red meat that we don't even know about yet. But what John is talking about, when I get people back on red meat again, they have energy, they feel better. I mean, it's transformational once people go back on red meat again. All this demonization of red meat is really just leading us down the wrong path. And, you know, when you look at us historically, John is British, I'm Irish and Scottish. I mean, my goodness, our ancestors would have thrived and survived quite nicely on things like red meat, a diet that is essentially high in animal fat. We would have gotten about 70% of our calories from animal fat.
We have a fertility clinic, it just struck me, mm-hmm. at University Hospital. We have people, couples, who spend inordinate amounts of money and years of suffering trying to conceive.
Yet our native Indians here in Canada, historically, when they had trouble conceiving, they would go on a diet high in bear fat. And then the couple would conceive.
Do you happen to know if at University Hospital, as part of this fertility clinic, the word nutrition even comes up?
No idea. I highly doubt it. Mm-mm.
John, this whole issue of infertility, have they joined the dots to put it together with nutrition?
Well, it seems to me that nobody in the mainstream medicine in the UK joins the dots to nutrition apart from to lead them in the wrong direction. It seems as though, for example, Dawn suffered very much from depression, and they were very quick to write a prescription for Prozac for her, but never, not even once, asked what she was eating. Not once. Regardless of what they thought of what we were eating or weren't eating, they didn't even ask.
Okay,
now,
let's...
That's just crazy.
Let's make the top 10 list. Before we get to the happy part of coming out of the darkness of eating a vegetarian diet, let's, Pam, comprise the list, and you've touched on it already. The top 10 horrible side effects of a long-term, strictly vegetarian and vegan diet.
Well, it adversely affects fertility, number one. And number two, you're going to have lower energy levels, mood problems, sleep disorders. And we've had Lear Keith on the show who wrote the book, The Vegetarian Myth. I mean, she's no longer a vegetarian. She was 19 years vegan, and she is still feeling the biochemical imbalances. She's still in a lot of pain, physical pain because of it.
Depression?
Yep, fatigue and depression, very common. Anxiety, just an overall bad mood. I mean, they're very angry because of the malnutrition, copper toxicity, all these issues.
What would you like to add to the list, John?
To that, I would add constant headaches. Which I suffer from, which is not just, to be, in fairness, isn't just being vegetarian. It's actually, the vegetarian diet is almost inevitably high in carbohydrates. And I think that along with changing the diet away from just being purely vegetarian, in reducing the amount of carbohydrates and grains, etc., that I ate was really fundamental to that. And that really was, I haven't had a headache in 2 years, and I had headaches every day. And I also had chronic indigestion as well when I was a vegan.
That's right.
So I would add those into it. But I would say there was no aspect of existence that it did not touch, that it did not corrupt, and that no aspect that has since not been radically improved.
John?
Even to the point my mental acuity is greater than it was 2 years ago. The last book that I wrote before I wrote The Meat Fix was a book about soccer, and that was nominated for the William Hill Sports Book of the Year Award, which is a quite prestigious award in Britain. And I wrote that. The last draft of that was all written as I changed my diet, and I attribute the quality of it down to the change of diet.
Wow. Well, I've got to ask you. I know you have a wicked sense of humor, and you were talking about you had to joke about the life that you were going through because that was the only way you could survive. I do not know, John, how you survived those years because it was pure hell. I mean, basically, you had no sex, you had no energy, you didn't enjoy your food, you had all these medical issues, you were always on the toilet. Is it just coincidence that your name is John?
Well, the thing is, what you've got to understand is all of these things, this slow corrosion of health, happens one small, tiny step at a time. So you become attuned to it. You become adjusted to the idea of what's happening. And it's not like one day you're healthy, the next day you're sick. You just kind of get more and more and more and more sick. And so you get used to it. It starts to become your everyday reality. And I think this is what everybody does who is on a diet that isn't suitable for them, is that you attribute things that happen to you to other things other than your food. You get headaches, you think, oh, I'm a bit under stress. You know, you have a lack of energy, you think, well, I'm not sleeping properly. Something is, there's always a reason you can give to things. But well, more than likely, at the core of it all, is what you're putting into your meat hole. And if you're not putting the right things into your meat hole, such as meat, then you will not be feeling at your best.
John, we have to...
It's a slow decrepitude. It isn't something that just happens overnight. So you get used to it, then you tolerate it. You think, as I did, well, at least I'm not dead, you know?
John, we have to take one more break, and then we want to wrap it up and give them a takeaway. We'll be back with author John Nicholson. The book, The Meat Fix, How a Lifetime of Healthy Eating Nearly Killed Me. Another recovering vegetarian. Back in just a moment right here in London today on News Talk 1290 CJ. Okay, we have just 3 or 4 minutes left. Incredible. Incredible story, John Nicholson. The book is called The Meat Fix, How a Lifetime of Healthy Eating Nearly Killed Me. 26, 27 years, John was a vegetarian. Sicker than a dog. Couldn't leave the bathroom much of the time. No sex drive. And a whole host of health issues. How are you now, John?
I'm absolutely fantastic. And I feel completely rejuvenated. Just by eating a diet of essentially lots of meat, lots of animal fat, lots of butter, lots of raw milk, i.e. unheated milk, and some fruit and vegetables that are not high sugar fruits, I have turned... It's like I'm 20 again, I'm 50. Even the reason I wrote this book, I'll tell you what the change was. I was never going to write the book. And I went to have dinner with my literary agent. And he said to me as I walked into the room, "What's happened to you?" And I said, because I hadn't told anybody, because I thought I might, at this time, I thought I might change back to being vegetarian. And I didn't want to kind of admit that I'd eaten the meat. And he said, "What's happened to you?" And I sat down and I told him the whole story. He said, "You have to write about this because you have transformed." He said, "You look like your younger brother." You know, and I was so physically changed by it. So, you know, I've got stacks of energy. I feel younger. Man, I'm horny. I'm horny a lot of the time now, and I never was before.
Thanks for sharing that.
It's a great, healthy thing, you know?
Thanks for sharing that, and I mean that sincerely. He's horny well, half the time. Know. I mean, Pam, that's what you... I mean, this is blunt talk.
Yeah.
And John, I want to share this with you. I'm looking at Pam Colleen. She is the picture of health. And this is a woman who was dying as a vegetarian.
Uh-huh.
And Pam, I mean, you've been out playing tennis in 100-degree weather this summer.
I mean, yeah, I played three tennis tournaments in the last week.
And people say, "Why do you have Pam Colleen on all the time?" And I said, "You know why? Because we're saving lives. We're saving people from the grief of John Nicholson's lifestyle of being a vegetarian and being a vegan and really wishing, John, quite frankly, most of the time that you were dead."
Well, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, you don't realize how great life can be because you get adjusted to life being more mediocre. You think this is how it is. In fact, you don't even know any longer that life could be better. And the fact that life is so much better on every single physical and emotional level... I mean, I must say, one other thing I haven't mentioned was I put on loads of muscle. I mean, I used to go to the gym twice a week. And I just, like, physically, I've changed ridiculously. I mean, you wouldn't believe how much I've changed without doing a lot of work for it.
Now, John, I was going to say, you know, the people I work with who are recovering vegetarians and vegans, and let's not forget the near vegetarians because they run into trouble too.
Yeah.
But they're very grateful. You know, they have their epiphany. They start to return to their ancestral diet and they're very grateful for learning this information. But I know that, people like you, people like me are hated or, you know, by a lot of vegans out there and vegetarians. They just hate us. I imagine a lot of these people are, you know, have our pictures on the wall and throw darts at us, you know, and that's part and parcel to them being so malnourished and so angry. Pam, but at the same time, we're trying to help them. We're not trying to attack them.
I don't mean to be
exactly. I would not say I'm sort of anti-vegetarian in the other than in the diet. And I understand why people want to be. I think that the spirit behind it, which is to not cause harm to animals, is a lovely thing. It's not a bad thing in one sense. But
John, I have to jump in, John.
To eat a certain way.
John, I have to jump in. We have to wrap it up. John, we have to wrap it up. We thank you so much for joining us this morning.
And lovely to talk to you. Cheers.
Thanks, John. And your website is themeatfix.com.
Yeah, that's right. You can buy it on Amazon or any good books.
One real quick question, John. 5 seconds. Can you give me an honest answer to the question? Do we talk funny?
Yeah, you say about in a really great way.
Thanks, John. Great guy, great sense of humor, and great book. The Meat Fix, How a Lifetime of Healthy Eating Nearly Killed Me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm getting as passionate about this as you are, Pam, because we're rescuing people from hell.
Well, they need to know the truth, and they're not getting it, and that's the tragedy. So I'm teaching my nutrition boot camp in October, 4 solid weeks of this information, just to help people overcome the propaganda.
Your website?
PamColleen.com.
Okay. 11 o'clock news.